Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Kuf Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a mark the Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the bottom line of Daf Kuf Zayin Omid Beis, right after the Mishnah. In our previous shiur, we learned the Mishnah, which featured a man that went abroad, leaving his wife behind, and someone volunteered to support her out of pocket. Does he have recourse to recover his funds? Chonon said he lost his money. In other words, he has no recourse. And the B'nai Kohen Gedolim argue and say he can swear how much he spent and demand a refund or demand compensation for what he spent. The Gemara opens at the bottom, Tanan Hosom. A Mishnah appears there in Maseches Nedarim, which reads as follows: Hamudar Hano Mechavero. Someone who vowed not to benefit his friend. In other words, he withdrew the possibility of his friend benefiting from him. Yet, Shokel Loi Eshiklo, the person who vowed, is allowed nevertheless to pay the annual Machzis HaShekel tax for his friend, Uporea Lo Es Choivoi, and pay off his friend's debts, Umachzir Lo Avidoso, and return a lost item. Before we go further, I just want to point out in the topic heading that we have on the side, we've written the following: Devarim she mutarim lasois echad l'sheni she mudarim hano zeh mizeh. We have a situation where a vow was taken whereby they mutually will not benefit one another. And we've seen so far 3 points in reading the Tanaic source where even though they have vowed not to benefit one another, these things are allowed to be done. A second point that will be dealt with is Shnei Hezberim Lahasbir al Smach Ma Sover Hatana Demutu Lo Lefros Choyvoy Afa Pishem Udur Hanomi Menu. Point number 2 that we saw is particularly difficult to understand. How is it that one fellow can pay the debts owed by the other fellow when they're not allowed to benefit one another? The Tanaic source on the second line from the top continues and says, "V'mokum shenoit limschar," in places where a fee is paid for returning a lost article, the fee for the trouble that one put himself out to do. In this case, so the fee cannot be paid to the one who did the returning because then he is benefiting by receiving the fee. On the other hand, to just keep the money and not pay, that's also a benefit because this is money that everyone else would have had to pay, and now you are keeping it, so you're benefiting from that, and you're not allowed to benefit from the other fellow. So the solution in this case is Tipol Hano Lehekdish. The fee is to be paid to the Beis HaMikdash fund. Bishlamo Shoikel Loi Es Shiklo. I understand how that can be done. Mitzvah Ka'ovid. It's a Torah precept. It's a mitzvah to pay the Masa Shekel. And as a result of it being a mitzvah, it is not considered that I am benefiting him. And furthermore, the Machzis HaShekel was used to pay for public sacrifices through which everyone is said to have a share in the public sacrifices. The Rashi points out, as we will see shortly in the Gemara, that with regard to the halacha of machzis ha-shekel, with regard to this half-shekel tax, truth is, even if the money that you paid never arrived in the Beis HaMikdash, let's say it got lost, or it hasn't been collected yet, you nevertheless get credit for the korbanos. So that the fact that the machzis ha-shekel was paid isn't really a direct benefit to you. The Gemara continues. Disnan, the Mishnah says, there's another Girsa Disanya, it's a Tanaic source, that says, Tormen al ha'avud, v'al ha'gavui, v'al ha'osid likvos. Tormen is the process of taking money from the Beis HaMikdash chamber and then using it for the purpose of buying korbanos for avud, that's money that was sent to the Beis HaMikdash but got lost, ala gavui, money that has been collected but didn't yet reach the Beis HaMikdash. We should point out that the monies were sent in the month of Adar, and the new fiscal year was in the month of Nisan. So it could very well be that people sent in their money from a distance and it had not yet arrived in the Beis HaMikdash by the time Nisan, which is the month that follows Adar, so the first month of the new fiscal year. So korbanos nevertheless are offered on behalf of all of the Jewish people. And v'ala osid likvos, even if the money hasn't been collected yet to begin with, nevertheless, a person is said to have a portion in the korbanos. All it is that he misses out on the mitzvah. So the person who pays for someone else's masa shekel, he gets the mitzvah. But once again, let us repeat, the paying on behalf of your friend from whom you're not allowed to derive benefit and not allowed to grant him benefit is not considered a benefit. It's considered the fulfillment of a mitzvah. It's not necessarily related to this particular sugya. There's a concept that has relevance to the general realm of Nidorim, and it states mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. That's when you're performing a mitzvah, it's not considered as if you are receiving benefit. Benefit is more of a personal, non-divine nature. Number three, umachzir lo avidaso, nami mitzvah ka'avid, that I am returning to you your lost item. That act is an act of a mitzvah nature. It's almost as if we're saying it's between me and the Almighty that I am returning the lost item. It just so happens that you represent the vehicle through which I can fulfill the mitzvah. But it's not viewed as if I am directly benefiting you. Ela, poirea lo es choivoi. But this idea was the second of the 3 points we saw on the top of this Amid, that you have two people that forswore benefiting from one another, and yet I'm allowed to pay off your debts. Hakom mishtar shilei, that is in fact creating profit for you. Money that you would have had to lay out to pay the creditor, you're now saving that. And the penny saved is the penny earned. Your savings of it is a profit to you. So I am causing you to profit. And how can that be when we have forsworn benefiting one another? So there are two approaches in the Gemara. Omar Rav Hoshaya, Homoni Chononhi. This Tanaic source is authored by Chonon, that we're familiar with from our Mishnah. Omar Chonon in our Mishnah said that when the fellow laid out money to support his friend's wife, he has no recourse in getting that money back. So the case of Poelos Chovo is in accordance with Chonon, the Omar Ibeid Es Mo'isav. Well, this is an example of a very terse piece of Gemara. In order to understand it, though, we look at Rashi. Chonon hi domer ibeid ma'osav. Zesh Shapirnes is Eshes Chavero. There was the fellow featured in the Mishnah who supported his friend's wife after his friend took a journey abroad, leaving her behind. V'niskaven l'shem halva sheyishalim lo baylo. The fellow who laid out the money for her had the intention that I'm loaning him the money. I'm loaning the money in anticipation of her husband paying me back. And yet, Chonon says, Ibeid ma'osav, you lost your money. V'ein yochol lomar lo, and the fellow who laid out the money cannot say, Es choyvcho parati shalem li, I paid your debt. In other words, to support your wife, that's your debt. I paid off your debt, now you pay me. Can't say that. V'uadinami l'chol choyv sh'olov. V'yomad chaviru poro. V'zelo omar lo halveni. Any case that's similar to that, where you have a debt, and your friend comes along and voluntarily pays off your debt without having been asked, would you kindly loan me some money so the debt could be paid off? Eino chayav lo klum. You acted on your own, and I, whose debt was paid off by you, am not obligated to you anything. V'kevon de'ilu pare l'shem halva, lav halva hi. And therefore, since if the fellow who's paying off his friend's debt pays it off with this intent to get paid back, that's l'shem halva, I'm paying it as if I'm laying out a loan for you. It's not considered a loan. It's not considered a loan that you can get a refund or get the compensated for. Ki pare nami l'shem mechila, lav mi di yohivle. Even if you pay it with the idea of not getting compensated for it, it's still not considered as if he gave him anything. So, in simple words, it sounds very nice that he's paying off his friend's loan, but since the guy paying off the loan had no way of ever seeing that money back, never getting compensation for it, it's considered as if he gave him nothing. And using the term of Chonon, it's called lost money. Or if you want to be more crass about it, it's like you threw out your money. So throwing out money is not considered benefiting the friend. There might be, we'll call a collateral benefit, but it's not considered a level of benefit that would be a violation of the vows. That's the approach Rav Hoshaya takes. The Rav Omar, afilu temo rabbonon. You can say that the source on the top is in accordance with rabbonon who disagree with Chonon, who say that when money is laid out with a loan intention and you pay off your friend's debt, you are allowed to, even without being asked, would you lay out money for me? Even without that, you can get your debt back. The case over here is Hocha b'maya skinon shelova almanas shelo lefroa. The fellow who took the loan out, borrowed money with the stipulation that he need not pay back. So if I borrowed money and I don't need to pay back, you're coming and paying off the loan isn't benefiting me. I didn't need that anyway. You see how Rashi adds another dimension of understanding. We try to cover the points, but let's go through Rashi inside the text. Rashi, where we left off, afilu temo rabbonon v'yamri chayov, even according, you can set up the source at the top, which dealt with the fellows that forswore benefit from one another, in accordance with the rabbonon, afalpi that say where loans are paid off where one pays off another's loans, he is able to seek compensation. Afalpi shelo amar lo halveni v'gabi shar chov nami chayv l'shalem. Not only in the case of the wife, but in all loans, the fellow who voluntarily pays off his friend's loan is able to seek compensation. And when one pays off a loan and does so in a forfeiting, forgiving fashion, that still would be osir. And why is that osir? Because it's money that you could have recovered from him. Now that I'm not taking the money from I'm not demanding the money back, I'm forfeiting it. That's considered giving him benefit. The source on the top that said he is allowed to pay off the friend's debt, even though they're mudur hanoz zemizet. The loan was taken out with the following stipulation, that the money is being borrowed with the condition that it need not pay back until I want to pay it back. Lo yuchal hanoishel lochtzo, the creditor has no right to pressure its payback. Hilkoch lav midi yohivle. Therefore, when his friend pays off such a loan, he's not said to be giving the borrower anything. The Gemara continues analyzing these two opinions, Rav Hoshaya and Rava. Why did each one not say like the other? Bishlamo Rava lo omak Rav Hoshaya. I understand that Rava did not follow Rav Hoshaya's path. Demoikim lo karabonan. Through Rava's explanation, we're able to set up the unnamed Tanaic source according to a majority opinion. Ela Rav Hoshaya, my time aloma karava. Rav Hoshaya, he chose to set up the source on the top as a minority opinion, the opinion of Chonon. Why does he not follow Rava's approach? Namely, that it was a... Now, the Rava's approach states that loans that are paid off by friends, those friends can demand compensation in general. Why over here did Rava say it can be paid off? Because it was a loan that was almanas shelo lefroa. It was a loan that was extended with the stipulation that it need not be paid back. Well, that sounds good. Why doesn't Rav Hoshaya set up the source like that? Omar loch Rav Hoshaya. Nihi dano lesle. Granted that there is no hano. There's no actual benefit, as we said, because the loan need not have been paid up. However, the Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. Kisufa mi lesle. Is there not an element of embarrassment that is now being saved by the friend? We take a look at Rashi at the top. Kisufa mi lesle. The komichsif min amal v'tomid. Fellow borrowed money. Okay, stipulated that I'm borrowing this with the condition that it need not be paid back. But as long as the loan isn't paid back, is there not a level of, we'll say, shame or embarrassment that the borrower experiences from this embarrassed from this malva from the lender? Hilkoch I rabbonon he the amri lechov lovan as lefroa ufora chovo ufora chaver b'shvil chayv l'shalem. If we're going to set this source up according to the Rabbanan that said, in general, people that took regular loans with the expectation of having to pay back the loan, and your friend comes and pays that up for you, you, the borrower, have to pay back your friend. And in the case of a mudur hano, where you're paying back the loan with a forfeiting nature, where you don't expect the original borrower to pay you back, it still is osir. So ki lovo almanash shelo lifroa nami hano hi. Even when the loan was taken with the stipulation not to be paid back by the original lender, was understood he wouldn't have to pay it back, there nevertheless is hana umechilo mochil gabei, and the mechila, the forfeiting or the non payback is still the osir. It's still going to be osir, and as we explained, because of the embarrassment that now by the friend paying off the loan, the original borrower doesn't have to experience that feeling of shame. The next line, until the Mishnah, there are some versions that don't include it in the text. In other words, it's not in their girsa. So, for the sake of simplicity, we'll adopt that approach and pick up now with the Mishnah. Admon Omer Shiva. Admon, one of the Dayone Xeros that we were introduced to at the beginning of the Perek, there are seven halachas that are presented in his name. So we finished the two halachas in the name of Chanon, and now seven. And this last Sildav Kuf Yud Omer Aleph. So we have the Tanakama first, and then Admon. You can see that we have a special geometric form, a crown shape, on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh heading. You can see we indicate Ad Daf Kuf Yud Omer Aleph Hadgoshes Amon. The crown will be used to highlight Admon Shiva Dinim Shel Admon, the seven halachas of his. As we go on in this Mishnah, you'll notice at the end a double underline. Omar Rabbi Gamliel, Roe Ani es Divrei Admon, and this marking is Mu'ad Lahav Loto Litzorah Hagmora Ba'omud Habon Dav Kuf Tes Omer Aleph. When we get there, Mirtz Hashem, this marking will be of benefit. So now the Mishnah. The Tanakama says, Mi Shemes V'niach Bonim U'Bonos, someone who died, who left sons and daughters, Bisman Shenachosim Rubin, when the estate is of significance, there's a lot of value in the estate. Habonim Yorshim, Vabonos Nizonos. There's enough in the estate for the sons to inherit and for the daughters to be supported from. They're supported until they get married. We've seen this extensively in the context of Benon Nukvin in the past. Ubenechosim Uotim, where the estate is of limited value, and Rashi quotes the Gemara in Bava Basra that says it is limited to the extent that there isn't enough value to support the sons and daughters for 12 months. So there isn't enough to cover the support for both. That's called Nechasim Watim. What do we do then? Habonos Yozunu Vabonim Yasru L'Apsochim. The daughters can draw support from those nechosim, and the sons, they don't get any of it. They have to knock on doors for their own support. They have to seek handouts. Admon Omer, Bishvil Shani Zohar Hifsadeti. Omar Rabban, and he says that in a tone of wonderment, because I'm a male, and they're nechosim watim, I have to lose out. In order to understand this, we'll see a little bit more about that in the Gemara. Omar Rabban Gamliel, Ro'ani es Divrei Admon. Rabban Gamliel feels that Admon's claim is the stronger, and that in Nechasim Watim, there should be an inheritance for the sons as well. Mai Ko'omar. The expression of Admon in the Mishnah is not clear. Rashi says, "My komar im b'shvil shani zocher hifsadeti, mashma im b'shvil shani zocher v'koichi yofe hifsadeti." Just because I'm a male and I have greater strength, I should lose out. Umau yipui kocho. What we want to understand is what is this added strength, and we're not talking about physical strength. That's very clear. But some kind of advantage that he has as a male, and therefore he shouldn't lose out. What is that advantage? Omar Abai Hochi Komar, Bishvil Shani Zohar V'Roi Lasot B'Torah Hifsadeti. Because I'm a male, and in Torah law, only men have the obligation of Torah study. Women do not have the obligation of Torah study. if they study Torah or not is another question. That there's a mitzvah involved. Maybe it's a nice thing to do. Whatever. That is a separate story. But in terms of obligation, only the males are obligated in Torah study. So the Admon is speaking on behalf of the sons, the male children, and saying, because I'm a male and I have a Torah obligation, an obligation to study Torah, I should lose out. Rava objects to Abaye's explanation. Rava says that your explanation makes it sound like man de osik b'toru diyoris, one who studies Torah is capable of inheriting. Mandalo osik b'toru lo yoris, someone who doesn't study Torah is not in the category of one who inherits. And that's ridiculous. The inheritance is a Torah granted right. It has nothing to do with whether you study Torah or not. Elo omar Rava, hochi komar. So Rava now gives us his interpretation of what Admon was saying about the advantage that a Zohar has, and as a result, he should not have to lose out. And thusly, he is saying, Bishvil shani Zohar, v'roi lirash b'nechosim erubin, hifsadeti b'nechosim watim, had there been a large estate, so as a male, I have the sole right of inheritance. Girls in Torah law do not inherit their fathers when there are sons present. So I, who am a Zohar, I'm a Zohar, and there are Nekevos here, but as a Zohar, I have the inheritance rights in a large estate. Now that it's a small estate, I lose out completely. So that is the explanation of Admon, who said what he did, but as you can see, the Chachomim disagree that in Nechosim U'otim, in fact, the sons lose out or are deprived from inheriting. As you can see, we now are about to start another Mishnah, another crown appears, and we've numbered it number 2. We didn't mention earlier, but we're using a numbering scheme all the way from here till the number 7, which you'll find on the Daf Kuf Yud Omar Aleph. So you can scan down the page very easily to find the 7 halachas of Admon. The next Mishnah, Hatoein es Chavero, Kade Shemen Vehode Bekankanem. Now there's a Mishnah here that I'm not going to say that it's out of context, because the reason these Mishnayos are here is to feature the Machlokes, or the 7 halachas of Admon. Nevertheless, this Mishnah, it's real place is in Maseches Shavuos. So the sugya, this Gemara, from here till the end of today's shir, till the bottom line, is a sugya that built upon major concepts and precepts that govern the laws of oaths, of Shavuos. In the realm of Shavua, of needing to take a vow in areas of monetary concern, especially when you have a controversy between two people and one is making a demand of the other, does the other, in denying the demand made of him, does he have to swear or not? So there's a concept that's very well known. It's called Moida B'miktsas. One who confesses partially, and this is based on psukim in the Torah, as the Chazal darshan the psukim in the oral law, in the Gemaras. We learn that when someone is responding to a financial demand and he concedes partially, the Torah expects him to swear that the other amount, the other half, so to speak, the other fraction that you're demanding of me, I am not chayev. And we'll see examples of that here, but like the simplest case is Mr. A says to Mr. B, you owe me $100. And Mr. B says, what do you mean I owe you $100? I owe you only $50. The other 50, I do not owe you. And that, when he says that other 50, I do not owe you, he swears regarding that. He swears, it's called a shvua liftor. That's a shvua doraisa, a shvua to exempt oneself. We've seen this concept also earlier in this Masechta. The topic heading, therefore, you can see on the side, we've written Moide B'Miktzas, partial, we'll call it partial confession. So, the Mishnah. Hatoyin es chavero kade shemen, the hoide bekankanim. A person is demanding from his friend to pay him. Kadim are vessels that are like pitchers or small barrels full of oil. And the one who is being claimed from responds and concedes, I owe you empty vessels. Empty vessels, meaning the empty ones without the oil in it. You're asking me for vessels and oil. I concede that I owe you empty vessels. Admon omer hoyo v'hoyde b'mixes hataino yishova. Admon says, since there's partial confession, he has to swear regarding the rest that he does not owe. The chachomim omrim ein hoidoas mixas mimin hataina. The partial confession does not contain within it the essence of the original claim. And when there's this like lack of matching, where the response or the partial confession does not reflect the original claim, there is an exemption. This, by the way, is still quite abstract. We'll need examples, and we'll see more of this in the Gemara. But in the meantime, we see a machlokus between Admon saying that this case represents Moide B'Miktzas, which demands a Shvua be taken, and the Chachomim say it doesn't conform to the rules of Moide B'Miktzas. Amar Rabbi Gamliel, Roye Ani es Divrei Admon. Now the Gemara. One wants to draw some conclusions. Shma mino the Rabbonon, should we conclude, according to the Rabbonon that said that there was exemption? Now, exemption in what case? So far the way we understand things, but subject to change, so far the way we understand things is that a claim of two items was made, pitchers with oil, and the confession was a confession of only one of the two items. And the Rabbanon say, exemption. So should we conclude from here, Tano chitim usaorim, v'hoide b'saorin, potter, that if A claims from B, you owe me wheat and barley, and B says, I owe you only barley, he would be exempt. Now, if we say that, Lema teve tjufta de Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, should we say then this serves as a refutation of Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel's law? The Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, Tano chitim usorim, where A claims from B, you owe me wheat and barley, v'hoide lo be'echod mehen, and B concedes, I owe you one of them, chayav, you are obligated to swear. That is a case of Moide B'Miktzas. So at this point in the Gemara, by presenting the Mishnah as we did, and I said it's subject to change, but presenting it as we did, that the claim was for pitchers and oil, and the confession was for only one of the items. Yes, I owe you pitchers, but I don't owe you the oil. That is like Tano Chitim Sorim V'Hodlo Bechon Mehen. The Rabbon and our Mishnah say exempt. And this Amora, Rav Nachman, in the name of Shmuel, says, you're obligated. So here you have a case of an Amora saying a halacha that is refuted by the Shitas Chachomim, by the majority opinion in the Mishnah. That's not good. So do we have any way of defending Rav Nachman or Mar Shmuel? As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice a triangle marking, and there's some numbering on the side of the Gemara. The house shape, under the Mivneh heading, the house shape represents Deos Chalukos Binyatanu Chitim Usurim Vahudu Lo Be'achol Mehem. A claim made for two items, and the confession of one of the two items. Does that constitute Modeh B'Mitzvos? Does that constitute partial admission in order to obligate a shvua to be taken, an oath to be taken? There are two opinions. You see, Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel, he says, Chayav. If you skim down the page, Rav Chiya Bar Abba, regarding the same case of Tanu Chitim V'Serim V'Hudu L'Bechel Mehem, he rules Potter, exemption. Well, at this point, we're dealing with Rav Nachman Omar Shmuel that says, Tanu Chitim V'Serim V'Hudu L'Bechel Mehem, and concedes to one of them, he is Chayav. So is that then refuted by the Chachamim in our Mishnah? The triangle is explained. These are Gimel Hezberim B'machokim Admon V'Chachamim. We have three Hezberim to explain what is the case that Admon V'Chachamim are really arguing about. We have this clear Amoraic statement of Tano Chitim Usar V'Odo Bechmehen. Chayav, is that case, in fact, reflected by our Mishnah, or possibly our Mishnah is talking about something that's dissimilar, and therefore the Mishnah doesn't pose any threat to Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel? Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. First triangle, the exemption of the Chachomim in the Mishnah is Betoyenu Midah. The taina, the claim, is for oil alone. An amount, a certain amount of oil. In the Mishnah we said, we saw HaTayinah Shemir Kadeh Shemen. That is someone claiming, you owe me a certain amount of oil. And what does the responder say? I owe you barrels, or I owe you pitchers. So that's not Modeh B'Mitzvos. That's not a partial confession. That's a confession of an item that was never claimed in the first place. That type of, we'll say, give and take, claim and response doesn't warrant a shvua to be taken. The Gemara says, if that's what's going on in the Mishnah, then ihochi mai taima da admon. Why would Admon say he's chayav to take a shvua on the grounds of Modeh B'Mitzvos? That's what Admon said. He said, Hoyol v'hoydeh b'mitzvos atayna. That's not Modeh B'Mitzvos. We gave you an example before of Oydeh b'Modeh b'Mitzvos. I claim $100, and you concede I owe you $50. I concede to still owing part of what you claimed. Here, if the claim was for a certain amount, midah means an amount, a quantity of oil, and the respondent says, I owe you barrels, there's no partial confession regarding the oil. It's not therefore called Modeh B'Mitzvos. Why would Admon say Chayav Shvua? Elo Omar Rava. Rava presents the Machlokis Admon Chomba. Before he does so, he goes to two initial steps on points that there really is no controversy. The controversy arises only at the third step. And that's what you can see we've done with the markings. You have the expression Dukule Alma and Ki Pligi. So that under what circumstances does the Machlokis arise, that appears only when you get to the Ki Pligi double underline. So Rava tells us as follows. Dukule Alma, that means Admon and the Chachomim agree, and we have a very important note that we've written in between the lines, and that is, remember, as you go through this Gemara, that the confessor in the Mishnah was confessing an outstanding debt of kankanim, of pitchers. The demand was being made, he says, he concedes, yes, I owe you pitchers. Just remember that. So now, Rava tells us that Kuli Alma, there is consensus, Hecha de Omar, Melo asora kade shemen yesh li beborcha. Borcha is in your pit. Oil is stored in pits. So someone is claiming Melo asora kade shemen. What's he claiming? Shemen kotoin le, kankanim lo kotoin le. That language of asora kade shemen means oil. I have 10 pitchers worth of oil in your bor, and you owe me that. You have to return that to me, or you owe it to me. And then the respondent says, I owe you pitchers. So there's that's called in Shavuos parlance, that's called Ta'an Ochita V'Holda B'Sorim. I claim one thing and you concede to me another. That is not called Mode B'Miktsas. That's not called partial confession. And that would, in the case we just described, claim for oil, responds, I owe you pitchers. That would not warrant a Shavuah, and there's consensus on that. Another case, Asora Kade Shemen Maleim Yeshli Etzlecha. If the claimer says, I have 10 pitchers full of oil in your possession that I want you to give me, Shemen Vekankanin Kotoyin Le. That is a claim of two things. And then when the responder says, I don't owe you both of the things you're asking from me, but I owe you one of the things you're asking from me. There's agreement, Rava will tell you. Agreement that what? Now here, don't forget, we're trying to defend Rav Nachman or Shmuel. So there is agreement then that you would be chayav shvuah, that when two items are demanded of you and you concede to owing one of those two items, that's called moida b'miktsas, partial confession, and that would be chayav. He pligi, when does the machlokas admon and nechamim arise? Hecha di omar le, where the claim was put in for asoro kade shemen yesh li etzlecha. Notice the difference between this, and this is gimel, and the beis, is that here you don't see the word mileim. You see the expression 10 pitchers of oil I have by you. Again, we repeat what we mentioned earlier. We know what the confession is. He concedes or confesses to owing pitchers. What's the claim though? Admon Omer yesh b'loshen azeh loshen kankanim. That in requesting, in demanding, or putting a taina in a claim of asora kade shemen, that implies pitchers with oil in it. So that asora kade shemen means, in addition to the oil that's being claimed, there is also an expression of pitchers. It's not a claim of a measure of oil, but rather it's a claim of pitchers and oil. And it's like the case of Toano Chita Musorim, you owe me wheat and barley. You owe me, in this case, pitchers and oil. And the fellow concedes, I owe you only pitchers. Okay, that's Admon, and that's called Moida B'Miktsas. For Rabbanan Safri, the Rabbanan hold that in this particular language of Asora Kadei Shemen Yeshli Yetzlecha, they hold Ein B'Loshen Azeh Loshen Kankanim. That expression does not imply pitchers at all. So that what you're left with is, there's a taina, there's a claim of oil alone, and there's a confession of pitchers. And that's like a case of Ta'ano Chitim V'Hodolo B'Sorim. A claim is you owe me wheat, and the other fellow responds and says, I owe you barley, and there would be no need for a Shavua. So the Machlokes between Admon and the Chachomim concerns a specific Loshon, a specific version of the claim. And that being the case, it's not... this doesn't represent a threat to Rav Nachman or Mar Shmuel, because the case that the Chachamim were saying there is exemption for, it's because the perception of the Chachamim regarding that language was that it was a claim of only a solitary item, not two items. And Rav Nachman or Mar Shmuel spoke about a claim where there were two items and one of them was confessed. But now this leads us into a question. Ela taimo de'ein b'loshen azeh loshen kankanim. So as far as our understanding of the Chachamim right now, why is there an exemption from a shvua? Is because the taina was not, it was not a multiple oriented taina. It was a singular solitary item in the taina, in the claim. And in this case, it was a taina of oil alone without pitchers as well. According to the Chachamim, the way we're inferring things right now, is that had the claim been clearly a claim of both items, pitchers and oil, and the respondent says, I owe you only one of the items, then there would be chiyuv. That's this chayav. He would have to take a shvua. Again, he attacked the shvua even according to the Chachomim. Leimo tevei tufta Reb Chiya bar Abba. Wow. Well, this presentation of the Chachomim would then refute the Amoraic opinion of Reb Chiya bar Abba. D'yomer Reb Chiya bar Abba. A claim of two items of you owe me wheat and barley, and keeping the parallel, you owe me pitchers and oil. Potter. And the respondent says, I owe you only one of the items. According to Reb Chiya bar Abba, he would be exempt. But how did we explain the Chachamim just a moment ago? That had the original claim been in for two items, and the confession is with regard to one of those two items, the Chachamim would have said, Chayev. So, do we have a situation now that we have the majority opinion in the Mishnah refuting Rabbi Chiya bar Abba? So, in defense of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Rav Omar of Simi Barashi, he comes to explain that the nature of a claim of pitchers and oil is not parallel to a claim of chitim and soirim. Why? Naase kemisha toanoi rimoin beklipaso. It's the relationship of pitchers containing oil is like a rimon, a type of fruit. Many often translate that as a pomegranate. A pomegranate in its klipa, in its shell, or in its peel. Where the if a person claims, you owe me a pomegranate fruit in its peel, it's one entity, it's not two entities. And someone who confesses to owing half a pomegranate, that's called moida b'miksas, and therefore a claim of pitchers with oil in them, and he concedes, I owe you the pitchers, is like the case of rimon b'klipaso. It's not two items. However, if the claim was for two distinct items, like chitim and sa'irim, and confession to one of them, that's not moda b'miksas, and that would be exempt. So, according to Rav Simi Ba'ashi, the case that the Chachamim were featuring, where there is an obligation, where there is confession on the pitchers, and which obligates him in taking the oath, that is different than the case that Rav Chiya bar Abba spoke about. Maskif lo Ravina. Ravina says, I can't accept your parallel. Rimon belokli poso lo mintar. The fruit content of a pomegranate without its peel, lo mintar means it can't be preserved. It doesn't last. It has very short shelf life. It's not preserved, literally. It's not guarded. However, shemen mintar below kankanim, shemen for its preservation, it's not dependent solely on the pitcher. You can keep or shemen stored in pits, so that the oil and the pitchers might in fact yes be like two items. And then we back to where we started with a kashan Reb Chiya Baraba from the Shitas Chachamim who said exempt. Ela hocha b'mayaskinon. Here's a third approach in explaining what the what's the claim and what's the response in the mission. With this explanation, we will not have to say we have a refutation of Reb Chiya Baraba. So what's the case in the Mishnah? The Omar Lay, the Tovea, the claimer, says, Asora Kadei Shemen Yeshli Etzlecha. There are 10 pitchers of oil that I have by you. In other words, you owe me. The Omar Lay Idoch, and the responder, the one from whom the claim was being made, responds, Shemen Lohoyu Dvora Me'olam. As far as oil is concerned, it never was. I never had any oil of yours. I don't. Kankanim nami, regarding the pitchers as well, that you're asking for 10 pitchers of oil, chamisho isloch v'chamisho lesloch. 5 pitchers I owe you, 5 I do not. So that is the situation in the Mishnah. Admon Omer, Yesh Beloshon Hazeh Loshon Kankanim. In the initial Tavia, the initial claim, which was what? You can see it very clearly, Asora Kadei Shemen Yesh Liatzlecha. In that language, there was contained an expression of pitchers, a claim for pitchers. So if in the initial claim there was a claim of essentially 10 pitchers and the confession was one of I owe you only 5, so there's a mode b'miktsas regarding the pitchers. Omigu deko mishtaba kankanim, and since he's taking a shvur regarding the pitchers, mishtaba nami ashemen al yedei gilgul, will make him swear regarding the oil as well through this mechanism called Gilgal. It means to roll over. In other words, we roll. Once you are expected to take one oath which has a solid basis, a sort of Torah basis, we are entitled to make you swear about another item concerning which you wouldn't have been made to swear initially. But since it's part of a case involving a Shavua that needs to be taken, we can make you take the Shavua regarding the other item as well. So even though regarding the oil there was total denial, and that's called in general, in Shavua's terms, it's called Kofer Bako. And we know that one who is in total denial, he does not have to swear to back up his claim. In this case, though, since he is made to take an oath regarding the pitchers, and the only reason for that is because Admon understands the initial claim to be a claim of pitchers as well, he can be made to take a shvua on the oil as well. For Rabbonan Savri Ein Beloshon Hazeh Loshon Kankanim, in that claim of Asora Kadei Shemen Yesh Lietzlecha, there's no implication of pitchers being claimed to begin with. So what was being claimed? 10 pitchers worth of oil. Oil was being claimed. What was being confessed? Pitchers. Mashetuano lo hodolo. That which was being claimed, namely oil, was not being admitted to. Total denial on the oil. Umasha hodolo lo tano. And that which was being confessed, namely, I owe you 5 pitchers, but there was never a claim for pitchers put in the first place. And with claims and responses like that, there is no grounds for a shvur to be taken. And that's why the Chachamim in the Mishnah said, potter. But once again, that's That is, we'll say that's this third interpretation of what the machlokes in the Mishnah was, and you can see that with that interpretation, you're not challenging Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, because as far as we are concerned, the Mishnah was not talking about a clear claim. Certainly, through the eyes of the Chachamim, there wasn't a clear claim of two items. There was a claim of oil and a response of pitchers. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba spoke about a claim of two items, chitim and seorim, and the respondent says a response to one of them, and he ruled what he ruled. We ruled potter. But as we say, that is that's not the case that the Mishnah was talking about. Let us point out a detail that Rashi mentions, and that is that in this case, had the original claim, according to the Chumim, included within it a claim of pitchers, 10 pitchers as well as oil, and the respondent says, I don't owe you 10 pitchers, but I owe you only 5 pitchers, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba would have agreed that that is Shivua worthy. That's not the case of Tano Chitim Usorim and Hodol Be'echol Mehem. In order for Rabbi Chiya bar Abba to acknowledge a Shivua, there would have to be a partial confession of one of the items being claimed. But as we said, as far as the Chachomim in the Mishnah are concerned, there wasn't even a claim of pitchers to begin with. And hence the response of partial pitcher owing doesn't constitute grounds for a shvuah to be taken. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.